Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I'm Bella Gandhi, the founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host. I started Smart Dating Academy in 2009 because I had this crazy knack of giving people dating advice that actually worked, that I took. I've been married for almost 25 years, and now my company helps people to date smarter and to find love. This podcast is meant to bring more love into your life, no matter where you are and what you do. And we're here to bring more life into your love. Smart daters, welcome back to this week's podcast. With no further ado, I have a guest here that is already blowing my mind in our green room. And I was like, wait, we can't chat. I've got to press record and get all of this juice into this episode. So I want to welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast, Sharon Pope, who is a master life coach and a relationship expert. And she helps women and men get the tools they need to improve, heal, or wait for it, release their struggling relationships, including their marriages. So Sharon, welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast.
Thank you for having me, Bella. I'm so thrilled to be here.
So let's jump into it. I could read your credentials, which are amazing. You're an author. Your work has appeared in the New York Times, all over the place. You're super legit, which is why you're on the Smart Dating Academy podcast. Just tell us, my question to you was, how did you get into this work?
Yeah. And when she first asked me that, I said, well, like a lot of us, we went through it. So I went through a divorce and, well, I should back it up because I went through a long period of time of where I was just trying to convince myself that my marriage, and this was around year 10 in the marriage. This is my first marriage. I'm in my second marriage right now. but it was about 10 years in, and I would wake up in the morning and feel like I can do this. He's a good man. No problem. I got this. And then by the end of the day, sometimes I would lay my head down and think, how in the world am I going to do this another day? And I would go back and forth and back and forth and multiple times in a day, much less a week. And so, you know, you try to convince yourself that my perfectly fine marriage is fine and that it's enough. And I thought I could make peace with that. Until I couldn't. And then I went through a divorce. And then I went through the process of trying to open my heart again to love and find the kind of relationship that I want. And what I realized was that it really didn't have much to do with me finding the guy. It had to do with me becoming the person who could create and sustain that kind of loving, connected, what I call a soulful relationship. And so I had to become her. So that's really what started me down the personal growth path.
I love that. And so I have so many questions that have already come to mind. I'm like, which one do I want to ask first?
And I can get into the whole marketing thing if you want. We can go there.
Oh, I don't even know what that is. We'll have to talk about
just marketing. That's what I was doing before. I was in marketing for 20 years. And then
My God. Absolutely. Right. And so talk about that as well. Like all of the tunnel of fire, the crap that we all go through. So you also were working and were unceremoniously asked to leave one day.
Yes. I called it the day I was freed, not fired, freed.
I love that.
And, you know, I had been doing that for 20 years and it's not like I didn't love it. There were certainly it had worn out its welcome for me. There were days that I was just really, really miserable. And I had reached the top of my profession. Like I was CMO, I was VP of sales, I was doing all these things that should feel really cool. So I knew that whatever was next was not going to look exactly the same as what I had been doing, but I didn't really know what was next. And so I knew that I just needed to keep showing up for myself and whatever that was going to present itself. And serendipitously, lots of things led to that. And I had a coach at the time, and she said, you know, as I was getting into coaching and training and speaking and things like that, she said, what do you want to talk about all day? And everyone, I'm telling you, all of my advisors, the people in my ears were like, you should go into corporate, like executive coaching, because that was the world I came from and there's money there and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, no, I just want to talk about love and relationships all day. That's it. That's all I want to do. And she's like, okay, here we go. Now we know where to focus. And 11 years later, here I am.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you're being freed from your career and being freed from your marriage. Were those around the same time?
They were 3 years apart.
Okay. So ish.
Ish. Yeah. They were about 3 years apart. And I went through my marriage, or sorry, I went through my divorce during a time when I was really grateful to have that position because it was something that I felt like I could do on like automatically, you know, like on autopilot. Because there are days when you go through a divorce that like you shouldn't really even be driving a car, much less making million-dollar decisions. So I was grateful that I had something that I was good at and that I could sort of do on autopilot. But then after the divorce, there came a time where I was like, I'm ready for what's next. And that's when I moved into a different position with a company. And then that's the company that got bought and they brought in their people. And it's okay. It's all good.
And that's what led you to where you are today. So amazing. Yes. So I know so many of us can relate to these major inflection points in life, a failed relationship, a career that suddenly ends, but that you find the meaning in your mess. And And here you are on this podcast doing work that you love. So dear listener, be inspired if you feel stuck in some aspect of your life. You're talking not just one, but two people here that have been stuck in various aspects of their lives and are having this conversation to try and help you. So listen to that little voice inside of you that knows if you're not in the right job, in the right relationship. So don't ignore that little voice, because he or she is the smart person that's living inside of us and knows and exactly what's good for us.
And that little voice, it doesn't have a lot of words, right? It just says, yes, no, stop, go. It might just say, like, the words I got were just, not this, darling.
Yeah.
It didn't say, well, if you do this and then you do it right, and then you 11 years from now you'll have a tremendous business and you'll be able to do all these things and you'll be remarried and love of your life. No, it doesn't give you any of that.
No.
It just is like, it deals in whispers and short little words. And sometimes it's just not this.
Yeah. I had today's the day.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Those are the little phrases that we hear. So let's come back to, you said something about becoming the right person. And so many of us listening to this podcast, especially, are maybe in a relationship that they feel like has come to an end, or maybe you've been single and you're out there and you feel like you're running on a treadmill going nowhere fast. And we think that utopia and heaven is going to be when we find our person and find the lid to our pot. But you and I both know, as we were chatting about, that that's not the truth, right? Yeah. And I always say, remember, we call a significant other a plus one because we are one. We are whole. So how do we become the best person first? Tell me about that.
I think so much of that lies in, are we willing to become more self-aware and more conscious about our unconscious material? And what I mean by that is the patterns, and that can be patterns in terms of who we're drawn to. It can be patterns in terms of how we react or we respond. It can also be your unconscious material is also your wounds, right? If I don't feel like I'm enough, or I don't feel like I'm worthy of love, or I'm whatever, then I need someone else to help me with that. And that's not their job. And they can't do it for you. That's your work. And so then we place expectations on our partners. And whenever we're placing expectations on our partners, that puts a weight on their relationship. And I'm not someone who says, like, you shouldn't have any expectations in a relationship. I think there are some people on the planet that can live that way. I think most of us mere mortals cannot. But I also know that we go in with far, far too many expectations on relationships. And it really shows up once you get married. And so I think, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with James Hollis at all. He's someone that I really like. He's a Jungian psychologist. He's not alive anymore. But he has this quote that I pulled specifically for this because I thought it's so perfect. He says, ultimately, the health and hope of any intimate relationship will depend on each party's willingness to assume responsibility for the relationship to one's own unconscious material.
Wow.
And it's like, do you know yourself? Because it's not about finding the dude hiding behind the bush that that checks all your boxes. I promise you it's not. It's about, can you become the person who can attract and create and sustain the kind of relationship that you really want? And so we got to become it first.
Now, how do we become self-aware? Well, everybody thinks they're self-aware.
Everyone thinks they're self-aware.
Everybody thinks they're self-aware. I'm in the coaching field, right? And I've worked with thousands of clients. Everybody believes, including myself, that we're all self-aware. How can we become more self-aware?
I think asking yourself hard questions like, and this was something that really, it was the impetus for my first book, but it was like asking hard questions like, what's my role here? If it's not all about the other person, and there's always two sides to the story. So what's my role in the creation of this experience? And even if it's like, because we've all been in relationships where there's been like really bad behavior or really hurtful behavior on the part of our partner. Well, then what am I allowing? What am I overlooking? What am I telling myself it's okay when it's really not okay because I'm scared to be alone, right? That's the stuff of, and maybe just that simple question of what's my role in the creation of this experience? And it might just be this last experience at love. It might be the one before that. It might be the one before that. And the more you do it, the more you will find the patterns. I mean, I went through between my, you know, going through a divorce and then being out dating as a mature woman in her, I think at the time I was late 30s. You know, I started to realize like the only common denominator here is me. So until I can figure me out, I really am in no real position to try to create love just so I can feel loved. Right. And so I had to spend some quality time with myself. I had to become, you know, I don't want to say, but it sounds trite, like become your best friend. But I also think like, if you're not your favorite person to hang out with, why should anyone else want to hang out with you? Right. So if I don't want to spend time alone, I noticed I was filling my time with people and activities. And I would just go, go, go until the end of the day because I didn't want to sit with the hard questions. And so that was when I grabbed a journal and I was like, Sharon, enough, enough of the madness. Stay home on a Friday night. You'll be fine. Right. And then I went to Italy for 10 days by myself. I didn't speak the language and I was just journaling and journaling and journaling. I just needed time for me to figure out, you know, who I was and what I wanted and what was I willing to do to create what I wanted.
Okay, so in doing this, you're in Italy, you're journaling, you're starting to get to know yourself. You've stopped the madness of the friends, the brunches, the this, the that, to try to avoid yourself, essentially.
Right.
So relate to this, by the way. I feel like I can be that person also. It's like filling every increment up with a person or a coffee or a walk or a wine or blah, 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 blah. And it's like, just hold on. What are you running from?
Yes, because you can't outrun yourself.
Right, right, right. And so I like the question of what's my role in the creation of this experience? What did you discover about yourself?
It was a book. I mean, it was a lot. I can tell you a few facets of it. That I liked to be in charge because I wanted to feel safe.
Oh, I love that. I hope you don't mind. I'm probing way beyond the script.
No.
You go. To be so real.
Yeah, it just might take me a second to like...
And relatable. Yeah, you, dear listener, you know, I take a script, crumple it up and go somewhere else usually. So here we are. And you're, you like to be in charge.
So I like to be in charge, right? And I was the boss at work. And so I was used to being the one to make the decisions and telling people what to do. And that is an energy that served me really well at work and did not serve me very well in my marriage. because there is no off switch between the car ride from the office to my front door. Yeah. And I brought that same sort of controlling energy at home. And I mean, I was the boss. There was no decision made in that household that didn't have my mark on it. And I remember I would get really frustrated with my husband because I was like, why can't he just make a decision? And I, of course, put it on him, right? Because that's what we do. It's his fault. He should be stronger. He should be more masculine. He should be different so I can feel better. No, I didn't make space for an equal partner to show up for me. It was my way. And the reason I did that, if I went back further, was because I had been in relationships where I had been hurt. And so I wanted someone who I knew wouldn't hurt me. So I chose someone who was willing to be bossed around and who would let me be in charge. And of course, he would never hurt me. He was safe, because control is always about, I don't feel safe. So I'm trying to control the circumstances and people in my environment, which is a losing battle, right? Because then I had lost respect for my husband, a perfectly good, kind human being, by the way, like he is to this day. But I lost respect for him because of my patterns. And so that was really like, that's probably the deepest one that I can tell you that I discovered about myself.
It's huge.
Yeah. And once you see it, here's the really great thing, because no, we don't like to look at ourselves. We like to point the finger and say it's his fault, right?
Right. But he can't make a decision.
Right. But once you point it at yourself, while it feels a little prickly at first, on the other side of that is so much freedom. Because if I did that and I created this outcome, which I don't want, then I can do it differently and I can create a different outcome. I'm completely in charge of my experience, but it means I got to show up for that. I've got to be able to tell myself the truth when I'm being too controlling. You know, I've got to tell myself the truth when it's my fears that are driving my need to control, so that I can pump the brakes and go, wait a minute. What I really want is an equal partner. And so now I have this strong Aries partner. He tells me he's headstrong. That's an Aries trait. I said, you know, that's just code for stubborn, right? He just laughs. But he'll tell me, like, when I'm pushing too hard. Now he's like, mm-mm. He says, no, like, we're not doing that. Pump the brakes. I got this. You asked me to do this. I'm doing it. And I'm going to do it my way. And I'm like, yep. Thank you. Noted. Like, I know my stuff. I'm familiar with it. So when he presents it to me, I'm like, oh, yep, you're right. Okay, got it. And it doesn't create a big fight. And we don't have to create years of dysfunction of covering it up and pretending it's okay and never talking about it. We just can call each other out on our stuff and notice it and receive it and go, yeah, you're right. Let me go back to my lane, which there's plenty there to work with, by the way.
Right. There's plenty of stuff to clean up in my lane. I'm going to stay.
Right. I'm going to let you do you, babe.
That's amazing. What an awesome journey. And what did you, and how did you guys meet?
We met online.
You met online. Listen, yes. Smart daters, did you hear that? I know everybody hates the apps, but guess what? The yes. apps can work.
You know what? I have to tell you this funny story just because we can talk about this here. It's so funny. So we went on first of all, we had talked over online and stuff for like 2 weeks or so. And he asked me out on a date. And I was like, a date? Like dinner? I'm thinking, you know, usually it's like coffee or drink or whatever. Like they don't want to commit to full dinner.
Too long.
So he asked me out on a date. And I was like, okay, that's different. So we go out on this date and he wanted sushi, which is my favorite thing to eat on the planet. So I'm like, okay, that sounds great. So interesting. Well, we sit down and we're just chit-chatting. And he says to me, he said, well, my mom's really worried about me. And I was like, freaking mama's boy, what? And I go, why is your mother worried? And he's like, well, this is my first internet date. And I'm like, I am your first internet date?
You're like, dun, 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 the pressure is on.
I told him, I said, I think you just won the lottery. I said, do you know how many frogs I've kissed?
Hilarious. You're like, you win.
And then, you know, a year and a half later, we're engaged. Another year later, we're married. And so I still laugh to this day that I was his first internet date.
Oh my gosh.
And so it can happen one time.
I love that. And you found someone who is strong, smart, decisive, and you have been able to make this work and really happy.
Yeah. And by the way, nothing will challenge you like long-term committed relationships. Like, you think it's hard at the beginning? Oh, be with someone up close and personal, watching them pee for a few decades and try to keep the desire and fire alive. And that will challenge you.
Right.
But exactly. That's what we're here for, right? That's what we're here for. We just have a front row seat to each other's journeys.
That's amazing. Well, tell us all of your good things. Tell us, you've got so many things about mistakes we make in relationships. We've got secrets to keeping love healthy. Just
let's talk about all
to us. I just want to hear all your gold.
Okay. We can't get to all of it, but we're going to do some good things. How about
we're
that?
We're going to get to some gold today.
We are. So, let's begin with, so I primarily serve women who have been married typically for more than 10 years, and they're very much in the stay or go decision. So things aren't working, they're not feeling good, and now they're like, oh, is this ever going to feel good, or do I have to leave it? And then that's terrifying. So they don't know how to fix it, and the thought of leaving is terrifying. So they get stuck in this place of not knowing how to fix it and not knowing how to leave it. And so they just get comfortable in this very uncomfortable place. I call it comfortable discomfort.
Comfortable discomfort.
So because that's who I serve, I'm going to speak to the things, because people tell me all the time, they're like, you should write a book. I've written 10. Like, what do you want?
Like, prolific author here. You want the 11th?
Right. They're like, you should write a book for people right before they get married. And I'm like, yes. However, here's the problem. No one's asking those questions right before they get married because they haven't experienced it. Like, none of us are out here going, help me solve the problems that I don't have. But they don't have these problems yet. So I'm going to share with you at least several things that people always tell me, I wish I would have known this before I got married early on in the relationship. So first of all, all the things that come really easily and naturally early on in the relationship. And what I'm talking about are things like connection, spending time together and being present when you're together, intimacy, and even desire for the other person, spontaneity and adventure. All of those things come pretty easily early on in the relationship. But once you are in a long-term relationship, and you can be married or not married, lots of people live together or choose to not get married. It's totally cool. But you're still going to experience the same challenges. Those things don't come naturally after a while. And I think that there's this prevailing wisdom that love should be enough and that we should all know how to love. And we know what that looks like and we know how to do it and we can do it brilliantly once we find the right person who's going to make it easy on us, because we think love should be easy. And so when it gets hard, that's when we start to question it. And so what I would just tell you is that, like, all those things that came easy, now you actually have to work on it. I joke that in marriage, like, you actually have to plan spontaneity.
Right. That's so true.
Especially once kids come along, like, you want a healthy, productive sex life where you're like, you actually have to plan that now. That doesn't just randomly happen where you both like are in the mood, not tired, not distracted with any of life's circumstances, and ready at the same time. It's like waiting for the stars to align.
Like, yeah.
Nope, now you got to plan it. Sorry. It's how it is.
And you have a totally different set of stressors on you now that you have two careers, two kids, aging parents. So it's not just forget about spontaneity. You now have other concrete blocks on your shoulders weighing you down, which cause what? Conflict.
Yes. Yes. Because we very much believe that our partner should make it better for us.
Right.
Sometimes they can. Sometimes they can't. Sometimes we create our own holes.
It's so true.
And they can't fix it, or they don't know what to do to make it better for you. Right. So that's one thing. You got to just plan for this. Like, you plan that all the things that seemed easy at the beginning are not going to be easy if you want to make the relationship last long term. Another one, and maybe it's similar, is that we should expect change. And what I mean by that is we should expect to have, I don't know, I'm going to make this up, 10 different relationships with the same person. Because we think like who we are when we get married, like I know them, I love them, we're going to get married, we're going to say till death do us part. I call them the five dreaded words that are killing marriages, till death do us part. because we put the marriage over on a shelf and we think that will take care of itself. We're going to pour our love, time, attention, energy into our career or our kids or our families or whatever we want to create next. We've got lots of things. But imagine, like, Bella, do you have children? I don't know if you have children.
Two. I have a 20-year-old and a 16-year-old. I'm in it.
All right. So can you just for a second, like, go back to being the woman that you were before you were a mother. Like, just do it.
Oh.
You can't.
I would love to.
You can imagine for a second.
You've changed indelibly.
Yes.
The day that you find out.
Yes.
That you're a mom. It's not the day you give birth. It's the day you realize there's a zygote inside of you.
And I think there's probably like the day you find out, and I've never had children, but I have grandbabies. So let me, I don't know this from personal experience, but I would bet that it's like the day you find out, then your life changes.
Yeah.
And then the day you have the child, your life changes. And then about a month, maybe 3 months after the baby's born, and you're like just not even able to get out of your sweatpants. And you just are like, when is this going to end?
Never.
There's another version of you. Like, we're going to change. The things that you will want in your 50s is never the same thing that you will want in your 20s. But we don't expect that change. And so we're often surprised by it. Our partners are usually very surprised by those changes. And often they're very confused that what we want now is something different. But I want to like normalize us renegotiating our relationship as it evolves and as we evolve, right? Like when you go through, we were talking about menopause in the green room. Like when you go through menopause, you change, okay? And it's a perfect time to renegotiate your relationship. When the kids are gone, when your last one leaves, perfect time to renegotiate the relationship. About what, and I always say, begin with what do I want to feel in my most intimate relationship? Start with the feeling, and then you can back into how do I want my partner to help me experience that feeling? How can I offer my partner that same feeling? Like if it's love, appreciation, desire, adventure, spontaneity, all the things that we were talking about, any of that, like how can I offer that to my partner? And how can my partner offer that to me? And let's open up that conversation because they are not going to be able to read your mind, not even after several decades. They're just not that magical.
No, that's so true. I love that. That's so wise. Everything you're saying is resonating so much as, you know, I'll be married 27 years in May. So,
congratulations.
Thank you. So you're right. It's like the person you are when you're dating versus you're in a young relationship versus you have one kid, two kids, one kid leaves. The second kid is going to leave in 24 months. You're like, oh my God, now what? Right?
Right.
It's a totally new phase. And so many people are correctly, I think, made nervous by the thought of that. And there's so much, you know, I mean, there's this phenomenon now, gray divorces, right? That people aren't understanding, to your amazing point, that you can renegotiate. Now, I'm not saying everybody's worth renegotiating. I get a lot of people that have been cheated on, I mean, just in terrible ways.
Terrible.
Out their marriages are too crowded, whatever it is. Okay, that's nobody that you want to renegotiate with. You can't change somebody's character, right?
No.
But
no.
I think knowing not to be afraid of that, if you're in a pretty good marriage, and that it's okay to say, who am I now and what do I want from you?
Yes. And by the way, your partner, if they love you, they want to know who you are now.
Yeah.
They want to discover this version of you.
Yeah.
Now, if they're like, nope, I just need you to go back to being the woman who has no needs and who's willing to subjugate herself for everybody else. Like, I just need that. Can you work that out? Like, that's not a healthy, productive thing. But if we actually like knew that change was coming in our partner and in us, then we wouldn't fear it so much, right? The unknown, the fearful part is just because it's unknown. And then we also maybe wouldn't fear maybe quite as much. Fear will always be present, but we wouldn't fear divorce as much either. If we realize like sometimes relationships do just come to an end where it's like this chapter needs to be closed.
Yeah.
And it might be time to open a new chapter with the same person, but it might be time to just open a new chapter for myself.
Right.
It honors
right.
me. Yeah.
And I love that. And, you know, I work with people where, you know, they've been married a couple of times, maybe three times. And a lot of them with the awareness that they now have say, you know, I wish I wouldn't have divorced my first partner.
Really?
I could have made that work. Right.
Yeah.
I was too young or too this or too that. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's never too late to learn these things. You may not want to go back to that person, but it's like, wow, knowing what I know now,
like people ask me that all the time, knowing what you know now, could you have made it work in your first marriage? And I'm like, it's not, first of all, it's a really hard question to answer because I know that I couldn't be who I am now had I stayed in that marriage. Like when I think about who I was then and how I am now, I'm just like, it's such a completely different person. So it's a hard question to answer, but if I had those tools, would it have lasted longer? For sure. For sure.
And maybe gotten better. Maybe not.
Maybe. Right. Right. We just don't know. Like it's a little bit of look in your crystal ball. Like, I don't know, but I'm grateful for the experience. You know, I'm grateful to have known him and had an opportunity to be in relationship with him. And had it not, had I not gotten as uncomfortable as I did, I maybe wouldn't have made that change. And I wouldn't be living the life I am today. And I wouldn't be helping all these people. And I wouldn't have this love of my life now. And, you know,
100%.
Like, it all happens. And as it should, it's okay.
You're radiant and you're glowing. Everything you've done, not that it was easy, but it's like every lily pad that you jumped on has led you to this place where you can now say, I am a different person in this new, amazing marriage. And none of what you were doing right now could be possible, probably, if you didn't have an amazing and supportive partner who also helped lead your life and made decisions and told you to go back to your lane.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, like who I am now, I'm not done. I'm going to keep evolving. I'm going to keep changing. So he's going to keep having a relationship with a new woman every, I don't know, 8 to 10 years at least. And what if we were excited about meeting that other person, right? As opposed to like fearful of it, or we say things like you've changed as if it's a bad thing. I'm like, yeah, I have. I think that's a good thing.
And it's okay. Thing. And let's talk
that's
about
it. Because I'm like a fine wine, honey. We just get better with age.
Oh my gosh, I love that. And, you know, I think this is so great about keeping your relationship healthy. Are there kind of tragic mistakes that we make in our relationships? I mean, not that they can't be fixed, but what are some things that we should try to never or rarely do?
Well, if we start with the flip side of what we've been talking about, the desire, like no desire to grow, like who I am is who I am.
Yeah.
Accept me as I am or don't accept me at all. Like that, I find that unnecessary. Like relationship tools are not something we are born with necessarily.
or taught
because the only way we are taught anything is just by watching our parents. And even if they're a beautiful example for us, times were very different one generation ago. I always joke that my parents left my brother and I out in the car while my mom would go in grocery shopping. Like, you would never do that today. Like, times are completely different today, and our expectations for marriage are completely different. You know, one generation ago, my mom knew her role. She knew what she was supposed to do. My dad knew his role. We don't have real role clarity, but we've got lots of freedoms today. So if we don't have any desire to grow, I think that that is a tragic mistake to your relationship. And if we go back to the idea at the beginning of the best thing, the best gift you can give to your relationship is to know yourself more, then if you don't want to know yourself and you just want the whole world to adjust around you and you don't want to grow as your partner is evolving, then please, my friends, do not be shocked when they serve you divorce papers.
Right.
So have some openness to maybe I could do it better. Maybe I could learn how to communicate better. Maybe I could learn how to listen better. Maybe I could learn how to be a better partner. Maybe I could learn how to deal with my own fear so I'm not so controlling, if you take me as an example. Yeah.
I'm pointing at myself for the, I know you guys can't see me because this is audio. I'm like, right. We like to be large and in charge.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing that's kind of tied to that is like, if you think it's going to be no effort, like it's only worthwhile or it's only a good relationship if it doesn't require anything of me, my friends, you're not going to be healthy in any relationship. So anything that is going to thrive is going to require some effort. I don't care if it's a houseplant or a child or your marriage, like it needs some of your love. It needs some of your focus and some of your energy to really thrive.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. And do you, I'm just curious for myself and for everybody listening, yeah. Do you have questions? You know, like sometimes I like to ask my husband, you know, how can I love you more? How can I be a better partner?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Do you have any other like little conversational starters that can start these conversations of evolution? Does that mean you had one?
You know, one of my favorite questions is just like, what are you most excited about? And it can be in the week ahead, the year ahead, whatever. Like it can be a good birthday or anniversary type question. What are you most excited about? What are you most looking forward to? What do you have the most trepidation about? The how can I love you better? You know, is it, I think that's a great question. My husband and I did this exercise recently where we took these, because I always call it like, if I don't, I call it eating my own dog food. I have to practice what it is that I preach. So my husband and I did this exercise where we came up with three words of what, how we wanted to feel in our most intimate relationship. I came up with like five, he came up with however many, and we agreed on these three. And one of them was respect. So that's a big deal for my husband, is he wants to feel respected in the relationship. And so then we went through just like a week of where I would just in my free time, like while I'm driving, when I'm getting ready in the morning, whatever, I'm thinking of how can I offer my husband this? And how can he offer me this? At the same time, he was doing the same thing. How can Sharon offer this to me? And how can I offer respect to her? Yeah, they didn't match. And I'm telling you, like I told the people in my program, I was like, y'all think I'm like the greatest wife and just intuitively knows my husband so well. I thought I knew how he wanted to be respected. And I had these things. And then when we got together and we compared notes, he had a completely different list of things that I never in a million years would have thought of. So it's good hygiene just to do that. Just like, how do you want, not just because to be loved is sort of an overarching umbrella, but once you start getting more specific, like I want to feel respected, or I want to feel appreciated, or I want to feel happiness or levity or fun. I want to feel fun in our marriage. Like there's a whole period of time in most marriages where we're like, we don't have time for fun. We got things to do here.
Right. There's fun. What are you talking about?
Right.
And then we have lacrosse games to go to and parents weekends to go to.
Right. And so I'm thinking like things like, give him words of affirmation, tell him, you know, how proud I am of him, give him hugs and kisses, like affection, that kind of stuff. He's like, when I make a decision, please don't second guess me. I'm like, I'm supposed to be the relationship expert here. I didn't know that. I never would have thought of that. And I also didn't know, by the way, that he felt disrespected when I questioned. Right. And so I'm like, even though that's hard to hear, it's really good to know, because now I know how to love him better. I know how to respect him better. So that can be a good way to incorporate these ideas into your relationship in a really practical way.
I love that. And Sharon, do you work with individuals or couples as well?
So occasionally I will work with both members of a couple, but I will work with them individually. Okay. And I do that very intentionally. I work with individuals because I think that we can make the most progress when I'm working with the individual. If you think about it, if we're having a conversation about some really tough sore spots in your relationship, you're going to say things differently and you're going to hear things differently when your partner is sitting 6 inches from you. So we can get at the heart of the matter really quickly when it's just you and I.
Yeah.
Right. And then even if I'm working with your partner, we can get at the heart of the matter with them really quickly if it's just you and I. So we just don't have so much time to like have to wade through all the politeness and the trying to save each other's feelings and all of that. We can just get at it and go, well, how are you feeling? And how are you, you know what I mean? So even when I'm working with a couple, which occasionally I do, but mostly I work with the individual, because a lot of times two people are not willing to work on the relationship in the same way at the same time. And that's okay. But you don't have to wait. Like if you wait until you're both ready, it's again, like waiting for the stars to align. We want to work on it. We're going to do it in this particular way. And we both are ready to be here. I have found that when I've done work with couples, there's usually one that wants to be there. And she very much wants me to tell her husband that he's wrong. And then he's being drugged there. He doesn't really want to be there. He's just there to check the box so that his wife won't leave him. Like, and that's like, it's just not conducive to creating real change that feels alive and dynamic and where they're both in it, you know, to win it. So
I love that. You've been a wealth of information. Where can we get more Sharon Pope?
Well, I'm pretty easy to find if you just Google Sharon Pope, but you can also go to, I'm going to send you to, SharonPopeBook.com. That's where you can find one of my books. It's sold more than 300,000 copies. And I'll tell you, like, I think it's my best book, like in terms of relationship skills to get equipped with, because love is not just an emotion. We should learn how to love. That is not something
Action.
That we've learned how to do. So get equipped with real relationship tools so that you can be successful, which is what everyone wants to be. But we think we should just like instinctively know it. Like we should all be relationship experts, except clearly we're not. The divorce rate would tell you we're not.
and that's SharonPopeBook.com.
That's it.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, Sharon, thank you so much for being here today. This was amazing.
And it went too fast.
I know. We'll have to have you back for an episode 2. Smart daters, I hope you're inspired by this and the fact that dating has its challenges, relationships have their challenges. But at the end of the day, I hope that you leave this episode knowing that it's all about the journey. And like we said, at a certain point, there's going to be a meaning in all of this mess. And whatever, you might be the only one who knows what the internal mess is going on, the mountains that you're trying to climb right now. But one day you'll look back over your shoulder and say, man, I did a pretty good job. And you know what? This was all worth it. So I wish you a beautiful week and we will see you next week, smart daters. Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love, follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.